All right, now everybody can be funny now. Everybody's allowed.
Yeah. Well, why start now, you know?
So I've seen this beast that is behind you as your wallpaper, Liz, before, and not knowing what it was, it's like, oh, yeah, that's like the proper, like, 360 generation of, like, HD JRPG animal. This looks like Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah, that was really popular. 1,000% Nathan.
Yeah,
You talk amongst yourselves. I need to go get my Lothcat.
Okay. Let's move over to Gable.
Yeah?
Gable, you're across from this fellow with the reference desk.
Yes.
You are, right now, all of the world's information is at your fingertips. The only thing that it comes down to is which questions you ask.
Yeah.
And how much you can pay.
And I recently found out that giving out Travis's secrets was not worth anything. Not fair.
Yeah, well, I mean, a former member of the Uhuru crew and like purportedly the changeling, there's only it's rumors to them. Rumors.
Yeah.
You know?
My question for the crew would be two things. Firstly, is there anything you think you would have wanted me to ask based on like what the captain needs, what John needs? And two, up to what level do we think the captain was okay with Gable talking about the Uhuru? Like, eventually the cat's going to be out of the bag that we're back. So up to where are we? Would you want me to stop?
I mean, the dramatic irony of Aramon not knowing how much you've accidentally divulged is definitely a thing that is fun.
But this is fiddly enough that I think we would have discussed it beforehand. Like, hey, you can up to here.
Because we did a bunch of checking about Acheron, and I think that is doable without mentioning the Uhuru directly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's kind of like talking in people who were around the Uhuru at certain times and periods. It's asking about those rather than us, if that makes sense.
Yes. All right. That is up to... Okay, then mind. And any questions that either of your characters would want answered.
Yeah, checking on what's going on with the Tempest Armada also feels like a thing worth checking.
Gotcha. Good. All right, we're back at it. Thank you. This is so kind, and pardon me, it's been a while since I talked to a reference desk. We are somewhat interested in... the young sir has an interest in piracy. And an interest, I mean a huge fear. The youngster is very, very scared of pirates, particularly the Tempest Armada, because of ghost stories told at his bedside. Just out of curiosity to relieve his troubled mind, what's the last known location of the Tempest Armada we want to make sure to avoid?
Of course. Now, there are many ways to answer that question. The most generalized, of course, is that the Tempest Armada has been relatively quiet as of late. The skies have been fairly empty and even sailing for commercial and privateer vessels across the whole of Sphere. But there are more specific answers if you are willing to pay.
Of course, I've got the money.
In which case, I will need you to make a wealth check.
I'm very wealthy. I'm just trying to check to see that my sheet actually matches what I know about our wealth, which it may not.
Well, the thing is, the wealth stat is a reflection of what you can personally authorize or pull together in the moment. There can be a lot of extenuating circumstances around that. So you might need to spend in from other stats. They could be like, well, you don't have...
Okay. Yeah, I'll pull out of reputation then.
Yeah, your reputation or your charisma, like that is you then going to the crew and being like, I know that this was a resource expenditure, but it was important to get this information.
I feel like we had this discussion the last time of like, I'll keep
we
on.
We probably did, and we probably will forever. You know why? Because we're in our 30s now. None of us remember anything.
No.
I barely remember my child's face.
Oh, Jesus. I believe, like, I've been pulling from continually over the course of this conversation. So I think it's 2d6s.
Okay. Yeah, 2d6s.
I mean,
just roll it up. Yeah.
A 4 and a 2.
Well, Liz.
Yeah.
Do we not have a program that you can roll that gives us the results directly?
Core now? Skilled core mastery. I don't
so they
know.
Would be the d6 core dice.
Okay, core untrained. All right,
core untrained. Because
gotcha,
yeah,
gotcha.
Okay, good.
All right, now I need to learn to use the system.
All right,
dice.
That summary okay. is one success.
One success. All right. Yeah, it's not an overwhelming amount. The Tempest Armada. Rumors have it, there are no specifics on this, but the Tempest Armada has shifted its focus from routine raids to very specifically acquiring materials and moving them across sphere. Many of the remote strongholds that the Armada once held or raided from, there has either been a quieting down or a retreat. The suspicion is that they are building something, but exactly what and to what purpose is unclear. At least those that control the Armada do not know. Red Feathers themselves are unconvinced. At least Red Feather Command is unconvinced that this is building towards something. There are many who are already claiming victory.
Fantastic. I feel like that helps. I won't know for sure. I don't know what will ease the young sir's mind.
I would assume in young sir's position, especially around the immediate area, would probably rest well knowing that there has been no pirate activity in this area for months upon months.
All right. I'm reaching the end of my conclusions and my queries. Just out of curiosity, and I hope that this is... a freebie, if you will. Can you give me, as the reference desk, you have a code of secrecy unless one were to be compensated for the commensurate amount, correct?
Code of secrecy unless one is
You can't tell anybody unless they pay a lot. So you just keep it to yourself.
Yes, unless there is specific inquiry made that certain questions were asked. We have no reason to advertise our customers' business. It would certainly hurt our ability to operate in the circles we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am interested in sharing some bits of information that could be, I would say, priceless. And
interesting.
That is up now, to your determination as to whether that is the case. But
if you would like to offer information onto the marketplace, be warned that if it is sensitive and priceless information, there is a chance that we have clients already seeking that information. As soon as it enters into our network, it would become available to them for an appropriate price.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. My query, in regards to the masquerade.
Ah.
I have my information, as I say, I believe it to be priceless. I would love to negotiate with you. If you too find this information to be quite priceless, I would require not only details of how to enter upon this party, I would need assistance accessing it, material assistance that I think you could provide.
Material. I could
as a reference desk representative. Again, depending upon the information, we have a wide informational network. We do not in-house keep invitations to sensitive events, but certainly the reference desk is connected to people who are connected, and if a piece of information was deemed valuable enough to the network, I think considerations would be made. It would tip the balance of this conversation into us owing you. That is, of course, dependent on what the information you plan to offer is.
Well, that's the question of the day, isn't it? And I'm going to do a little magic. A little magic.
Ooh. Ooh.
I would imagine we're in a room with a lot of open windows, right?
Yeah, sure.
Gable's going to do a little magic to shut all the curtains.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I think there is because this is like a room full of rows of desks and those green banker's lamps. And we'll just say there are these like tall windows that, have this intricate, glass work on them. And the lighting for most of this conversation has been fairly bright. And as you do this magic and, unless you were casting a specific spell, Liz, I think if you spent like just a point of magic, like you could easily dim the lights of the room. It's just, it's so subtle that he almost doesn't notice that it's like dark in the room until it becomes shadowy.
Gotcha. Gable leans over. I would like to tell you a story about the beginning of the world.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, you know what, Gable or Liz, I'm ruling that that is absolutely equivalent exchange. That I think the way that you tell the it does come down to the way that you tell the story, because he needs to believe some of the things that you say.
Yeah.
But like totally easy. Out of sheer curiosity from a GM's perspective to know what information is out there, are you telling the origins of the world or are you telling the story of the Starfall?
I'm telling him about me, just all of my business up until...
All of your business?
But in the sense, like, who I am, how I ended up here... like how I am a fallen, I used to be this, and here's my relationship to the slain god. And depending if he is shitty about it, I can also talk about what I think the Morning Star is up to right now. But that's something that I don't super know. I'm just giving only the information that I have about myself.
I love this as a cut to black moment. I do feel like if we were in a prestige television show, that's exactly how it would break down. But be aware that at some point in the future, I will call upon you as a player to return to the moment where you are in front of the reference desk and elaborate on how Gable reveals that they are a fallen to this mortal being who is now in a dark room. That's going to be an important image that we would want to show. But I do, I love everything about this. And yes, as the GM, the things that will be able to come to you out of this with without needing a role because you have put up a lot weighted against this, you are going to be able to get a lead on, you will know exactly where the event is. I think we can reveal to you with 100% certainty that this event will be attended by the current sitting president of the Red Feather Syndicate. And people who have access to invitations who will not be using them, those names are revealed and available to the Uhuru.
Great.
So we'll work out how we want to capitalize on that later.
Amazing.
I think we cut back to the Uhuru and we cut to Carlos on the Uhuru. I think, and Tyler, I'm going to ask your permission for this. I think Jonnet, while he's on this quest, chasing after our Ariel, our dear friend, realizes I'm not going to get back in time to infiltrate the factory. So I think you can fire off a feather because you do have the ability to text. What message does Jonnet write Carlos, letting him know that he needs to find somebody else to infiltrate with him?
I think that there's like things tend to go a little sideways in the world of the Uhuru, and like planning and execution of a plan. And so I think Jonnet, before maybe he like left, kind of knew that it was like, all right, things might not go the way I like thought. Basically, he just talked to Carlos and was like, if you get anything from me, take that as a sign that like we're now improvising, we're now tweaking the plan. Mm-hmm. Like I'm out of the picture. Like the ball's in your court. So Carlos truly just gets like a feather. Like in my brain, like the feather delivery system is almost like a little volatile, like it explodes through.
I like that it thunks and the explosion is like parts of the feather that aren't written on like poof off.
Oh, that's so cool. And it's like it hits the wall, the feather parts explode, and the only thing that's left is just like one little quadrant of feather that has Carlos's name, just the most hastily scribbled. It's truly just like as Jonnet is following Bagel out of the bar, he just like scribbles it out, and as soon as he like gets out of the bar to the outside world, he just like throws it behind him. He's like, "Oh, wait up," and just tosses it.
Mm-hmm. It does sound like this is emojis, Ben.
Yeah, I guess it's the cringe emoji. Is like,
oh, great, yeah.
It's Carlos cringe.
I mean, you know, Carlos is on a lunch break and is sitting at a little wooden table near to the furnace.
What kind of food does Carlos like to eat?
Oh, I mean, it's definitely one of those everything sandwiches where like the fillings are unusual capital U.
Ooh, yeah.
And is definitely drinking tea or orange juice out of a flask that definitely had some kind of acid in it at some point. But you know,
yeah, I mean, it's just it's marked with like a label that says poison, do not ingest, like
And takes a they take a swig from it, and there's the thunk into the wooden table, and the parts of the feather go everywhere, and they glance at it through the very shiny mirror reflective goggles. I suppose this means it's go time then.
So the question that I have for you, both Carlos and Nathan, who among the crew members is Carlos going to go to join them on this infiltration mission?
I want to try and involve some of the new characters we've added to the crew.
Oh.
So let's have Carmen do it.
Oh, okay. I like it. A doctor and a
brewer / furnaceer, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Together they fight like crime.
I'm trying. Yeah, exactly. There is an opening to a television show. This is like some kind of buddy cop show for sure.
Oh,
because Carmen's former mafia too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carmen, apparently there's been a bit of a change of plans. So.
Now you don't dock in my door unless you've got something to ask me.
Yes, indeed. How would you like to go and use some of your old criminal days for a bit of espionage?
Espionage? You know, things have been pretty slow around here. I feel like I've pulled out all the splinters I can for now. So she like flips a sign to the doctor is out and goes, "Where's my costume?" And I think we like smash cut to the two of them in these industrial like factory outfits,
fully posing like Charlie's Angels, like these things just show off all the curves and swerves, but it does not. It is fully formless, but we're still making it look good.
Yeah, I think they like head up to the factory entrance. There is a nervous minute where they brace for the fact, like, well, somebody might stop us or check our credentials. But clearly it is not at this point. You are arriving when people would arrive. Like, the Uhuru does have like an understanding that this is a technocratic work system. There are people arriving and departing at certain periods. Yes, Tyler.
Can I just, if it happened too late, I totally understand. Can Jonnet have in, like, strapped that schedule? Like, the work schedule to the Carlos?
I think so. I feel like that makes sense to me. You know,
yeah, y'all have the schedule of, like, who's coming in, who's coming out, and, like, when they're doing that.
Mm-hmm, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you like, they know when they can enter the building, when there's going to be a lot of people moving in and a lot of people moving out, and they kind of blend in with the crowd. What you see on the factory floor is pretty wild. Like, people are all moving in concert. There is like a steady, efficient line. It does not appear to, at this point at least, be a hurried pace, but it is a very smooth and familiar pace. And as you see people like changing shifts, like they're very seamlessly replacing each other, making it so that the whole process flows forward. There appear to be like rows and rows of gigantic wagons full of what look like these berries. There is some kind of berry press that moves fluid down a line into like distilleries. Things are being boiled away. There's like a chemical separation process, and at every point there is someone monitoring a different part of that process. Things are being bottled up and moved over to other machines and whatnot. Like, there's a lot of back and forth process to the point where towards the end of the line, there is a powdered dye that ends up being like the actual pigment that is resultant from this process. And there is this brown liquid that needs to be like condensed off on its own. Through every part of this process in the middle, people are being very, very careful with the liquid. Like, not a drop is being spilled. And you can feel the tension. Even though this is a familiar thing, it's not the sort of thing where somebody is bored at the job as they're going through it. Everybody's pretty focused on this. Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, I could use your help if you have a few moments. I need more folks to leave reviews for my latest book over on Amazon. Why? Amazon reviews really help a lot with visibility, and as much as I dislike Amazon personally, that's how a lot of people buy my books. So if you've picked up a copy of the Ultimate RPG Game Master's Guide, whether you got it through Amazon or not, you can leave a review there. Just head to bit.ly/GameMasterRPG and take a few moments to leave a review. I'm aiming to get 25 by the end of May. Those reviews absolutely help me sell books, and they help convince my publisher to hire me to write more books, which is how I can afford to make this show for all of you. So once again, head to bit.ly/GameMasterRPG. And if you want to pick up the book for yourself, head to bit.ly/UltimateGameMaster. Speaking of my books, I'm going to be at C2E2 along with Jeff and John from System Mastery doing a couple panels based on our books. On Friday, April 26th from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. in room S402B, we're going to be running the Netflix and Kill RPG game show, where we match up people in the audience with monsters to decide to wed, bed, or behead. And of course, we're giving away prizes.
After that, we're headed to Booth 163 for a signing. Then Sunday, April 28th at 12:45 p.m., once again in S402B, we have the Ultimate RPG World Building panel, where Jeff, John, and myself are going to be making a magical world before your very eyes. Well, I don't know that it's magical. We're going to be using exercises from the Ultimate RPG World Building Guide. But we will be collaborating with the audience, and you're gonna want to join in on that. Afterwards, we're headed back to Booth 163 for another signing. I hope to see you there, heroes. As always, a thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. I cannot afford to make this show without the support of our patrons. They pay for everything you're listening to, from the performances to the editing to the music. All of it is possible because of listeners like you. And if you like what you hear, please head to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
So, in stage whisper to Carmen, I do believe there are two things in our mission list to do. We need to go and find the part where the dye is still in liquid red form, but not made safe yet. And then we also, I do believe, need to find a way to add in a fault that we can trigger later so the factory can stop working when we need it to.
Interesting. Okay, well, I do think both of those are going to be in mid-process. And this is a question to you, Mr. Chemical, or I guess it's Mixta Chemical Expert.
Oh, absolutely.
What is the most useful liquid poison or whatever to you? Do you need it to be at this like syrupy stage? Do you want it to be at this more liquidy stage?
Unfortunately, the captain is not a chemist at heart. He just said that it needed to be wine red and still a liquid. So I suppose, in the early refining after the initial materials are squished into the fluid dye, that should do.
Honey, say less. If there's one thing I know, it's wine. And Carmen, moves over to the line. I think there is... part after like the first round of refinement, I think this blood red juice from these quote unquote berries gets a little bit darker and clarifies. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the best stuff to take. I think it is siphoned off into clear jars. I think the glass from them is extremely thick. These are not flat-bottomed jars. They are kind of, how would I describe the shape? There is kind of like a conical shape at the bottom, but also like a conical...
like a Roman wine vases, right?
Yes. There's
amphoras? That's the word, an amphora.
And I'm sure our audience goes, oh, why didn't he say amphora earlier? Everybody knows that.
Thing about like year six history class.
We all remember. We all remember.
Yeah.
Ah, I see. See it. I Googled it. I see.
I think like there is a cart full of these. They are all like, there are corks and whatnot that are put. Each one is labeled and dated with like a timestamp of when it was extracted from the machine. So there is a big batch of these things clearly stored off in these different areas awaiting the next portion of the refinement process. So that's a target. Now the question is really, how much do you think we can get away with taking?
Well,
those bottles look heavy.
Yeah, they do. But fortunately, when it comes to volatile chemicals, I do have a few ways of storing it up my sleeve. And on cue, reaches up their sleeve and pulls out like test tubes.
Oh, literally. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's so many up there.
I was going to say, I'm a very practical person.
It's good that you have these.
You know, they're
so you're just always walking around with tubes.
Are we all?
I keep that thang on me. They're like slightly silvered. There seems to be some kind of treatment to the glass where it's not thick, but there is something about it that would stop it maybe dissolving immediately. But they maybe are. They're not so great against impact, however, so please don't fall on them should you trip.
Well, that also means that whatever conflicts we get into can't get physical.
Well, I trust the Sawbones to handle any conflicts with the grace of client Dr. Privilege.
Yeah, I'll be the muscle for sure. Okay, so we need to get you in position to siphon off some of it. I guess the last question is sabotage. What do we think about this operation? What does it take to disrupt the operation?
I picture, I'll float and then you can add in the additional complications as required. It feels like there is some kind of automated machine or pump that is part of the process. And to keep it working, they're like lubricating it. They're like using oil or something to kind of make sure that the parts keep moving. And just adding an acid or a corrosive agent or something that's going to make it start rusting, but slowly. It's not immediate. So at some point down the line, if enough kind of this tainted to whatever lubricant they're using added, it will eventually start eating away at the machine rather than lubricating it.
Okay. So basically, your sabotage plan is on a timer. This factory will stop as soon as, whatever sabotaging agent you put in, like, is put into the machine. There is, like, an exact amount of time it will take before that pump breaks down and they have to cease operations to replace the parts that were damaged in the pump.
Ideally, we don't want to be here when it breaks, right?
I mean, the two of you certainly don't want to be there when it breaks. The question, I guess, is like, this is, when do you want the sabotage to go off, ideally? Or, what is the sabotage going off going to buy you? Because if it's guaranteed to happen, you know, Carlos will be able to predict, like, okay, you know, looking at that, at this machine, knowing how corrosive whatever element I put into it is, we've got 10 hours or whatever before it goes down. So
because we've been given a vision of the future of when the big poison cloud kind of settles across the settlement and everybody perishes. How far away is that? Do we know?
You don't know at this point.
Okay, fabulous. I'm gonna say 12 hours then, baby. Let's go and give us
12 hours is ideally when the factory will shut down based on what you are doing. I see two roles needing to happen here. And let me pull up the Uhuru death chart.
Yeah, Carlos does not necessarily have stats, but
well, we can he's a crew, or they are a crew member, so everybody who is a crew member has roles technically through the Uhuru death chart. Because we're dealing with two NPCs, those NPCs are committed to the task and they will be at risk the most if the task does not go exactly correct. So what the two roles are, the role for siphoning some of this poison and not being noticed. And the other role is, I think it depends on how your sabotage works. I think I will give you a bedeviling check if you want to take a sabotaging agent and essentially slip it inside whatever oil can they use to maintain the machine. That is very subtle. You could just very quickly drop that in, but there are a lot of things that can go wrong vis-a-vis the timing. There is a more direct application that will be more controlled in its results. But that would require you to actually like touch the machine, drop something in the machine. It would be more obvious.
So actually, I think it will be a hard check to put it in the oil can with the caveat of there will be some volatility thrown into that or a bedeviling check with no volatility. So, and bedeviling is going to be harder to pass. That is three dice against you as opposed to two.
I did envision like adding it as an agent into oil cans rather than directly poking at the machine. And I there's fun in it not being precisely 12 hours. Like there's fun in that. Okay, cool.
Excellent. I think because you've got two characters committed to the task, you've got one D8 and one D6. So one untrained and one skilled.
What do I do? So if I am, what would be normally spending a point to like upgrade a die from like a 6 to an 8? What is the equivalent of that? Is that like hitting an additional segment on the Uhuru death chart? Is that the equivalent, like a 1-to-1?
So yeah, the one upgrade that you can do is you can overcommit a character to a task, basically increase the threat range that they would have. That would give you 2d8s. Then you would have, if there are any failures rolled, any net failures, there will be damage that gets rolled, and there'll be a 60% chance that some crew member somewhere is going to be affected by this.
Okay. I really want this unrefined fungus juice, so I'm going to overcommit for 2d8 instead of 1d6 and a d8.
Okay.
Okay. With that.
And so this is the siphoning roll.
Yes, this is the siphoning part.
Okay.
I'm going to roll for that. And all right, I have two opportunity, no successes.
I have two failures and a complication. So you basically have two failures and an opportunity here. First things first, we are going to roll on the chart. Hey, good news. The first one is 79. So that is no hits.
Okay. I went into this with all the confidence and immediately we've blown it. Damn. All right.
Oh, the second roll is 19. And who on the death chart is low. 19? Granny soft spot.
No!
Oh, and there Granny Soft Spot has no hit points.
There she goes.
So
again.
What Granny Soft Spot, I think, on the Uhuru, it is a late lunch that Granny Soft Spot is doing. I'm not going to say she's surrounded by the orphans because that would be horrifying and traumatic. Yeah. She is playing Illimat. She is playing Illimat with like a group of people. I want to know who is at the Illimat table with Granny Softspot that she sits down for her lunchtime card game.
I'm looking at this chart. I'm like, when was the last time we saw Marco, who is basically Luigi?
Oh, yeah.
Marco?
Oh, dear. Yeah, so it's Marco, it's Bowser.
Yeah.
We didn't mention him before, but Sonic is there.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Knuckles, Shadow.
We invited Sonic onto the Uhuru. Damn, I missed that one.
Oh, like we could tell Sonic what to do.
True, exactly. yeah, so Granny is sitting down for Illimat with these video game characters, and she is looking around the table and feels good. You know, like there was this crisis that she had in Acheron, or not Acheron, it was back on in Haven, where she was like really pushing herself to help lead this effort of making sure that there'd be enough peat aboard the ship to leave that island. All of Granny Softspot's work up to this point has been having kind of one last grand adventure. Everybody contributes to the Uhuru crew in different ways. And you wouldn't think that somebody like Granny Softspot would be hired onto the crew, but every crew member serves their purpose. And whatever led Granny Softspot to leave whatever life she had behind and go into High Skies piracy, here she has found a family. She looks across the table at Bowser, at Sonic, and sees people who she's come to think of as her children, in a way. And there is just this moment of gentle peace on her face, and she collapses. The crew who is playing with her surrounds her. There are shouts of concern as people pick her up. We cut to the doctor's office, where indeed the doctor is out. And it's not clear, even if Carmen had been at her post at that time, if she would have been able to save Granny or not. But now we'll never know. And that is what the operation risked. I think what happens, Carlos, you have this great siphoning system all rigged up to be able to subtly stand by these things. However, you are inspecting the seal on these bottles and finding that there is essentially a serial number process to the seal, that as soon as this seal is broken, they are going to know that it was tampered with. There is no way to tamper with one of these bottles without them knowing at some point in the future that tampering took place. And like, you are also trying to do this on an open factory floor. It's challenging. The whole thing is challenging. You walk up, you sort of see the process, and I think based on the damage that took place, you are going to be able to back off and reconsider your approach now knowing these facts.
God damn it. It's fine. It's fine. All right. At the very least, if we can get the operation sabotaged and people are no longer here, we can retrieve it at a later time.
I hate to do this to you, Nathan. That role was just for collecting the poison. The sabotage operation has not taken place yet. We have not rolled for that.
He's mumbling. They're mumbling to themselves like, "Hey, we can bank on this. Hey, if the thing breaks, we can come back, even if we can't get this now." So, all right, we're moving on to plan B then. I think there is a degree this time round of it being a running interference situation. It's one thing to have the apparatus on hand and kind of body block what you're doing on this line, but since the process of trying to sneak the tainted material into the oil cans might need somebody to look the other way, there is a bit of a two-person con man job going on where Carmen's kind of diverting an attention away to make this happen.
All right. Let's roll it then.
Now, asking the rest of the table, do we want to overcommit this one too or not? I just killed a person on the whim of a flick of the wrist, and I don't know if I could put another life in my hands like that.
I would say commit a little bit.
Do it.
Commit a little bit.
Do it. Okay.
Do it. Right.
A tiny Jonic Kessler with devil wings is on Carlos' shoulder. Overcommit to the bit. Do it. All right. Clearing that previous roll and rolling 2d8. Okay, this is better. We got two successes and one opportunity.
Holy cow. I got one failure and four complications.
Oh my god.
So a success with three complications.
Success with three complications. I think that the complications are just going to be the and this is something that Carlos can't know, the oil that they are using is not a standard industrial lubricant. It is something specialized to this system. So the way that it is going to react with the corrosive agent is actually going to make this machine break down much faster than it normally would. So you are able to perform the subtlety part of the operation without a hitch. You basically go up, make the drop. Carmen, like, asks a question to someone, like, pulls them away, and they turn right back to the can after you've made the drop. You watch the maintenance go down. You know that agent made its way into the machine. The only question now is, do you cut your losses, or are you still working to try and figure out a different way to steal? Or are you going to risk breaking a seal and have it be more obvious that there was tampering?
I think we do get a shot of that kind of like calling it like a Carmen calling somebody away for a moment, and Carlos running a hand over the gloved hand, like over one of the top of these lubricant oil barrels, and there's a shift of the glove backwards, and we see the elaborate, like really pointy purple manicure that they have on the nail as it like flips with one finger, just flips open like the kind of like top of the jerry can and just gets the tainted material in there quick as you like.
I think what I love about this most is I have always been picturing Carlos as like kind of a portly framed figure, but what I'm discovering is that's mostly tubes. I have no idea what their body is like under there.
Clink, clink, clink.
Carlos,
it's just
Carlos
devices.
Carlos externalized like his like circulatory system like years ago. It's just tubes outside of Carlos's body underneath their clothing.
There could be anything under there, even in
What does that mean? What does that mean?
What is your gender, Carlos? Mystery box. with that movement, subtle movement done, a little picture in picture, and Carlos like moves away. And there's great. Like a reconvening. There is a, I like the idea that this is the kind of company that has like micro breaks that are super not helpful. You don't get to properly sit and have like a, even a 15 minute. This is a 5 minute snack bar situation before you're back to the, back at it. And in that kind of miniature break, they, Carlos reconvenes with Carmen. We're going to have to cut our losses.
We're not gonna go for the toxin?
No, not yet. I would have loved to have looped back, but under current circumstances, there maybe isn't enough chaos.
What? Okay. Oh, I see. So we wait until the factory goes down, and during that chaos, that's when we strike.
That's how I feel about it. Otherwise, the other circumstance, the other option, is if we had enough workers on our side that they could turn a blind eye at the proceedings. But I don't think we're there just yet.
Well, you know, that can be a captain's council level issue. I say, you and I, we grab a drink before we head back to the ship. Our work here is done.
And we looked great while doing it. Fully padded.
Yes. They exit, and there is like a synth track sting as the credits roll on that particular episode of their Buddy Cop drama.
There's a convertible car that they're riding in at one point. Who even knew that cars were available in this setting? It's great.
Well, yeah. It's a car, but also the car is a skyship, so it's like just driving through the sky.
It's confusing imagery. And the car never appears in the show itself.
Certainly
executives told the showrunners, like, hey, this is going to confuse a lot of people. And they're like, it's fine. It's a metaphor.
But there is a toy of it. So it did manage to come around full circle.
Well, it is in the animated series based off the adult television show. That's 100%.
Nice.
Skyjacks.
To my love, I address this to my dearest heart, but I also mean it for all my loves. I am writing in the hope that someday I will have the words between us to speak this to you. I am from someplace much warmer. I think you know this. For a long time, I tried not to speak the name as it fell heavy in my throat. Now I do not say it so it does not see me and call me back. One of the strange things that troubled me most when I arrived was seeing how the sun has changed her face. In my home, it would coat the earth and trees, kissing every part of the world with heat and life. Here, she moves so stiffly, filling the sky with light, but none of her warmth blesses what she touches. It is no wonder the grasses here stretch so tall. They are yearning for a true embrace that never comes. I was delivered here from a cell. Just a year ago, I could only call the smallest sliver of light my own, and I felt her heat in that dark place. The kind of heat that chokes you when you breathe in. I have just the barest understanding of why I was put there. The feathers did not bother to explain when they took me, and I never had the strength that would allow me to demand an explanation. They ripped me from the arms of another lover and delivered me to darkness. I am troubled by the fact that the only way I can picture her face now is in tears. My tongue is also foreign to you. I did not speak your language when they sent me to their prison, and I did not learn it when they traded me here. All I understood when I signed their papers was that I would see the sun again, and that was enough. The labors they need me to perform here are not complex enough to require words to explain. Once I learned their routine, they lost all interest in me, and I was free to wallow under the strange and cold sun of this place. Of course, there were others who tried to welcome me in. You, I am sure. So many babbling soft and friendly nonsense words, gesturing me near. It was easy then to truly devote myself to the business of misery. To fortify whatever barriers existed in language with my own bitterness. I do not think I could have met you then. No, it was not until I started to feel the touch of scarlet that I tried to speak. For months, I worked, I ate, I retired to my bed. I understood some of what others suffered. I saw their wraps and gloves. At meals, I saw the bright red of their lips and tongues, as if they had painted themselves. In common spaces, I even saw the way people marked their skin. I believed it to be a disease, that somehow my loneliness was protecting me, insulating me from the plague that moved around this place. I always imagined it to be painful. I mean, exclusively painful. A burn or a sting, maybe an itch. Seeing others made me wince and filled me with chills of dread. When it truly started for me, I did not recognize it. I thought at first my clothes had been improperly washed or that the temperature of the water was abnormally cold. I fought the sinking realization until I saw my tongue turning red, that same painted bright hue. I understood that this was the reason the sensations had become so acute. Why every small thing that brushed my skin was a fulmination. I knew so little then. I saw and felt myself changing without understanding what was truly at risk. No information, no rumors, just my own dark imaginings. The thing that truly drove me to you was a pebble. A small thing caught in my shoe. I stepped on it in just the right way to fill me with agony. It was a brief but profound pain. I broke down. It was too much suffering to bear on my own. I went to that tavern that so many had tried to coax me towards in the past. Even if I could not or would not speak, I would not be alone with this. I must admit, I was not prepared for the world inside. It was shock enough to bathe in the hum of conversation, a thing that I had avoided for months. But I had never seen so many be so close, so openly. Mouths full of ale, laughter, and kissing. Hands roaming. I was in a strange place, overwhelmed by a strange circumstance. I felt so very far from everything I knew. I began to weep, silently as I could, alone as I was damned. Of course, you know what happened next, dear. You found me.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at OneShotPodcast.com.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.
Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at DreamsToBecome or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.